Sir Angus, daughter of Krista Lissery of Ealing and Burnham.
Do I say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
You've been found guilty by the Elders of Audio Drama for uttering the words of too many audio dramas in various accents and alongside poor Twitter contributions making producers think about regendering their cast lists. And so, as a voice actor, you are to be auditioned to death.
Look, I just wanted to act, okay? And all I said to Fiona was that if that meaty part there written as a man could be changed to be played by a woman, then I'd audition.
Blasphemy! She thinks she can muscle in and make the producers turn men's roles into women's roles.
Yes.
Did you hear her?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Are there any women here today?
Oh, no. Women? No.
Women?
In audio drama? No. No. No.
In audio drama?
Well, I'm here.
And me.
Yep, I'm here too. It's me, Molly Beth, writer, actress. Well, I do most things, to be fair.
I'm all woman.
I think you'll be surprised at just how many women there are, to be honest.
There's quite a lot of us.
Ha! What have women in audio drama ever done for us? And welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Fiona.
And I'm Sarah. And today we're very excited to present a fantastic jam-packed episode full of amazing women in audio drama. It's a celebration of this exciting day on the 8th of March 2017 for this year. And we are celebrating all things woman. Is that right, Fiona?
Totally. It is indeed International Women's Day.
Hooray!
Or it was
fireworks
a couple of days ago. Yay!
Explosion.
And one or two women do work in audio.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited that there is the vast amount that we've been lucky enough to speak to and also explore in lots of the different podcasts that we listen to and love. So, yes, it's been a very exciting, collaborative episode, this one. And you don't have to be a woman to enjoy it, obviously, although, you know, if you want to pop that dress on or fancy a pair of earrings or something nice while you're listening, you know, we won't judge you. It's fine.
Not at all. All genders absolutely welcome.
Yes, please.
And if you are wanting to get into audio drama, whatever your gender, then basically the message I think that we're going to hear again and again from our interviewees today is do it.
Yes.
Go for it.
Yes.
And you're not alone.
That's the exciting thing. I think there is so much advice and source material and working men and women and all people of all sorts of persuasions who are just working to be creative. And I think, you know, don't let time stop you. Don't let people's words stop you. As far as I'm concerned, this is my advice for the day. So sit back and hold on to your what-sits. That basically, I think you only have one life. So you got to do what you want to do. And if this is what you want to do, then this is the time to do it.
Absolutely. And there are, for women out there, some great support networks. There's the Women's Audio Mission. Go and check them out. They're a non-profit organisation based in San Francisco who are set up for the advancement of women in music production and all recorded arts.
Yes. And then there's Sound Girls, which is all about empowering the next generation of women in audio. So people a bit younger than me, maybe, or people older than me who haven't done it before. So the next generation doesn't necessarily mean younger, does it? Does it?
No, probably does.
It's the next wave. It's the next wave.
Cool. And there is also, there used to be the Sound Women who now have archives at the Sound Women's Network. So do check them out because they still have resources and podcasts there that you can listen to
as
well. Yes,
there is some very useful things. I was a member of their site as well. And there's Facebook groups to have a little check out of. Including obviously our one and the very active and friendly and lovely group of people. So hello to all of our audio drama production podcast forum members.
Yes, and thank you for being so very active.
Yes, It's brilliant. The questions on there are so wonderfully thoughtful and helpful, and I think helping other people to progress. So, yes, a very forward-thinking group of people. So let's keep it that way.
It is indeed. Yeah, if you're not on there, if you're not really into Facebook or social media, yeah, it's really worth joining up for those kind of groups alone, really.
Absolutely.
Because you've also got groups on every single door that you can think of. Mm-hmm. There is a support group with tips and links to videos on how to edit in your door and so on. So social media is a surprisingly fertile ground for resources when it comes to making audio drama. So do check it out, even if it's something you might not want to share pictures of your cat or something.
Absolutely.
Go on there for the educational and the social
Absolutely.
Side of things.
And it is such a fertile place, but you don't have to go just once a month. So without further ado, here is our amazing set of contributors all working brilliantly and fantastically creatively in the world of audio drama today. First up, we have Emma Scherzjako.
After that, we have Sarah Baczynski.
Then Molly Beth Marosa.
Then Kessie Rilinki.
Laura Bramblett.
And Lauren Shippen.
Enjoy.
Hi there, this is Emma Scherzjako. I am an actor and otherwise creative person who has found themselves becoming a voice actor in the world of audio drama. Very exciting. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much to Sarah and Fiona and everybody else at the Audio Drama Production Podcast for having me on this episode, because I am thrilled and honored, and I think it's really important that we honor women, and especially women in the arts right now. So thank you very much. So I've got these questions that Sarah sent me, which I'm going to answer for you to the best of my ability. So first question, who am I and what do I do? Okay, so I am Emma Scherzjako. As I said, I am a voiceover actor, and you can hear me on an audio drama series called Wolf 359. You might have heard of it. You might not. Please go check it out if you're not familiar with it. It is a sci-fi audio drama series set in space, 7.8 light years from Earth, on a space station. And I play Lieutenant Renee Minkowski, who is the mission commander of the space station, at least at the beginning of the series. Who knows what might happen? Anyway, please go check it out. So yes, that's the main thing you can hear me on right now. But the other main thing you can hear me on is not an audio drama series, but a podcast called Anthology, which is actually a short story narration podcast. And it is produced by Rachel Liu, one of my friends. And so, you know, speaking of women in podcasting, please go check that out as well. It's Anthology Podcast. And I narrate a couple of short stories. I collaborated on a couple as well. I narrated a story called The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, which you might have heard of. And also I collaborated with Gabrielle Urbina, the creator of and head writer of Wolf 359, on another adaptation of a short story called Across the Sea. That's the name of the adaptation. The short story is called Los Buques Suicidantes by Horacio Quiroga. It's not in Spanish, but we have some Spanish in there. So that is a lot of fun, and please go check it out. Zach Valenti, who is an actor on Wolf 359, he is also a narrator on several of the stories. So Anthology, Wolf 359, please go check those out. So that's where you can hear me mostly right now. I've got a few things cooking up, if you will, and always looking for more projects to do. So that is where you can find me right now. I also do acting on the stage, though not so much right now, but that is the thing. That's my background. So question number two. Oh, this leads in perfectly. How and why did you start in audio drama? And talk about my creative training, courses, etc. Okay, cool. How I found myself in the world of audio drama is kind of totally by chance. It's not totally by chance. I have always wanted to be a voiceover actor.
starting from when I was a little kid, I wanted to do narration, I wanted to do books on tape, and I wanted to do voiceover for animation, video games, all that. So, and then I went and became a classically trained Shakespearean actor, which is also very useful. But anyway, how I became a voiceover actor was that somebody who I had had an English class with at Wesleyan, which is where I went to college. I went to Wesleyan University. His name is Gabriel Urbina. I mentioned him earlier. And one day he just contacted me on Facebook and said, "Hey, I'm doing this weird thing. I don't know if you'd want to be part of it, but it's an audio drama series set in space, and you'd play the lieutenant commander of a space station." And I said, "Absolutely yes." So that's how I got started, simply because, sort of by chance, but I think, you know, what you throw out into the universe comes back at you. And I think that's what happened to me. That's what I'm saying, because otherwise it's just totally random. Yeah, mostly what I say when people ask me about how my theater training helped to become a voiceover actor, I say it both helped and hindered, because the biggest thing, the biggest, I think, benefit to my training is voice training. And how you use your voice for theater is very different for how you use your voice in a recording studio. But the same fundamental concepts, I think they do apply. And so I'm very grateful. I studied at Shakespeare and Company. I started Linklater Voice Technique, which you should definitely check out if you're interested in being an actor of any sort, or even if not. It kind of like opened up my life a lot. The book by Kristen Linklater is called Freeing the Natural Voice, and you should definitely go check that out. So, you know, that has helped me a lot to know how to control my voice, but also I was trained to, you know, in theater, you make everything big. You make everything big and you have to pronounce things very precisely. And so our audio engineer for Wolf 359, he hates me because my plosives are pretty intense, and, you know, they make the microphone pop. And so he's always like, "I'm like, you gotta tone it down, please, please." I'm like, "I'm sorry, Jared. It's like, it's been ingrained in me. I have to enunciate everything perfectly." But I'm slowly getting over that and realizing how to relax a little bit. I think if you listen to me at the beginning of Wolf 359 to where we are now, I think you can hear a difference. And Zach Valenti, who plays Doug Eiffel, he was monumentally helpful, because he doesn't have a background in acting, but he does have a background in voiceover. And so he helped me realize how to act behind the microphone. So that's sort of an answer to that question. Tips and creative. Okay. All right. So for Wolf 359, right now we're a pretty tightly run ship. We didn't really know at the beginning what we were doing, but so basically our creative process is whoever is writing an episode or a series of episodes brings what they feel is a good draft to bring to the actors, and we have a read through first, just, you know, reading everything, not putting too much into it. And then the writers take that episode and edit it. And then we have a rehearsal or two, and then we go to the recording studio. Now, one thing that most people may not know is that I no longer live in New York City. I actually live in Boulder, Colorado. So, yeah, I know, really random. there's a story behind it, but I'll tell you another time. But anyway, so I live in Boulder, and I'm recording this from my little homemade recording studio here in Boulder, Colorado. And, the wind is like totally shaking the house. So I apologize if it sounds like, you know, my world is falling down around me as you listen to me talking. It's fine. I'm going to be fine. I hope. So the beauty of audio drama is that you can record remotely. I don't prefer to, and I pretty much come to back to New York for all recording sessions, but I don't always get back for the rehearsal. So what's kind of neat is that I can Skype into a rehearsal, and it's more or less effective. Fun fact, Michaela Swee, who plays Hira on the show, she has never been – nope, she has now been in the recording studio with us once. I'll let you guess which episode that was. But yeah, every single other episode she was recording remotely, which works. No, there's some wind. Which works both thematically and texturally, I think, in the show. Anyway, so that's a little sense of how our creative process goes. But moral of the story that I want to say is that recording remotely, it's, you know, it's not my favorite, but that's kind of the beauty of audio drama, is that you can create something and have people on opposite sides of the country or on opposite sides of the world, and you can create something together. And I think that that is amazing, and there's just so much possibility in the world of audio drama. Which sort of leads me on to the next question, which is talking about encouragement and advice and all of that. And what I would just say is, you know, you can record an audio drama from your living room or your bedroom, and you can get millions of downloads. It's crazy. We, for Wolf 359, we record in a professional recording studio, but I know not all podcasts do that, and they're incredibly successful and amazing, and I love them. But so my advice is just, if you want to do something, do it. I listen to the Nerdist podcast a lot with Chris Hardwick, and he's sort of a champion of that philosophy. And I really believe it. If you know, make your thing. If you want to make a thing, make your thing. It's hard, sometimes harder than it sounds, but for me personally, and I think for most people, the hardest thing is just doing it, just sitting down and doing it. And the cool thing about audio drama is all you need is a microphone, a little bit of soundproofing equipment, a computer. You know, you need to do a few bureaucratic things like make a website, have an email, all that. But, you know, it's all at your fingertips, really, which is amazing. And my only advice is also just be judicious in what you agree to do. This was good advice a college professor of mine gave me. You know, have your own artistic integrity. Just because somebody asks you to do something doesn't mean you have to do it. And, you know, it starting out, sometimes it might seem like, oh, they asked me to do this thing, I want to do it. But it might turn out that, you know, it's not a good project, or you're not doing it with somebody that you want to be working with or that you collaborate well with. And so take care of yourself, you know, believe in yourself and give yourself credit is part of my advice. So there's that. And then last question, who I'm influenced by and plug my shows. Cool. Well, I already did that a little bit, plugging the shows, Wolf 359, Anthology Podcast, and been interviewed on a few other podcasts, but I don't think I've been featured on them yet. So anyway, I might have a podcast of my own coming up, so look out for that. But in terms of who influences me, that's a hard question because so many people have influenced me. I think in terms of Wolf 359 and sort of how we conceptualize the show, we're all Wesleyan graduates, so Joss Whedon is a huge influence in terms of writing and style on the show. In terms of, and this is just because I've been rewatching Battlestar Galactica recently, but I think Mary McDonnell has been a really influential actor for me. She plays President Laura Roslin, and I think she's just beautiful and understated and makes interesting choices. And the more I can be like her, the more I think I will be a better actor. So, and that applies to voiceover and other acting as well. So great. So thank you so much again, Sarah, Fiona, and everybody for having me on. Again, my name is Emma Scherzarko. You can check me out at emmascherzarko.com. You might be wondering how that's spelled. I'll spell it for you. EmmaScherzarko.
ZIARKO.com. Yes, I have a complicated last name, but somehow I decided to keep it because it's fun. It's fun to say once you learn how to say it. So there's that. Check out Wolf 359, please. Wolf359.fm is our website, or Wolf359. The three numbers are numerical. You can also check us all out at Tumblr and Twitter. I believe you can follow Wolf 359 on at Wolf 359 Radio. And you can follow me on Tumblr at Amateur Jarko and on Twitter and Instagram at The Great Dilemma. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate this. And yeah, go women. Do it. Do your thing. Make your thing.
My name is Sarah Baczynski, and I work on the show Before True Light, The Awakening. You can find that production on SoundCloud, iTunes, FM radio, and Stitcher radio. My background in audio dramas is a little different, I guess you could put it. I originally started out making an adaptation drama of my novel, which is Before True Light, when I first graduated from audio engineering school to give myself experience as an audio engineer. And basically what happened, long story short, that got put on hold for a year and a bit as I started working with clientele. And then I came back to it and completely redid everything that I had started as my skills had grown and improved immensely. What I use to mix, I'm a little strange. I don't use a physical mixer. It's not because I don't want to. It was mostly because when I first started out in audio with my business, it was either invest in recording equipment, in speakers, or plugins. And so what I ended up choosing was investing in processing plugins, which is traditionally a part of your mixing console, so I just do that all digitally. And I also ended up investing in field recording equipment so I could record my own sound effects. So all my mixing is done in a program called Avid Pro Tools. Basically, what I have to do is I write all the automation for volume and panning, which isn't the most ideal. It takes a little more time than it would on a mixer. But considering how many audio tracks I use per session, whether it's for audio dramas or for film or video games, I'm using easily 50 to 100 tracks on average. So a small mixer wouldn't really be useful for me anyway. And one large enough is way too expensive. So yeah, the only real downside to doing it all in Pro Tools is that it takes a little more time. But I've been doing it that way since I was a student learning in audio engineering school in our labs, although I learned on consoles as well. It just takes a little bit of extra time, but after a while, I got it down to an art form that I can move fairly quick. If I ever did upgrade to a physical mixing console, it would probably be digital based because I work in a lot of post-production. So an analog console, analog will always color your sound. It can be certain consoles like a Neve and SSL have their own color to them. It'll change the sound slightly. And you don't really want that for the industry I work in. So I would go with a digital console and I would probably go with a control surface made by Avid because they have a lot of 5.1 mixing options that you have a joystick that you can put the sound in the front or the back or able to splice it into multiple. And that is what I would use if I would upgrade. Hints and tips for new sound producers. Never be afraid to go outside the box. Never say it can only be done this way or, like, for instance, my audio drama is a hybrid between an audiobook and an audio drama. It borrows elements from a full cast audiobook, but it also borrows elements from an audio drama. But on its own, it's not either or, it's a hybrid. which gives it its own unique feel. I use sound effects and the narration to create the scene in people's minds with imagery. So yeah, never be afraid to go outside the box. Never be afraid to experiment with sound design, because sound design can be just as powerful as an actor's or actress's performance. And if you are feeling adventurous with your sound design, if you're doing a fantasy or horror or sci-fi production, what I strongly recommend is getting sound effects that are recorded at 96 kilohertz, because you can use and abuse those so much more, meaning you can process them and manipulate them a lot harder without getting audio artifacts. And so you'll still keep its audio integrity intact. Because processing, if I were to do pitch shifting and harmonic modulation, reversing and even bit crushing, sometimes it depends on what you're doing. If you use a 44.1 or even a 48 kilohertz sound effect file, it's going to start sounding bubbly or tinny and just not good. When you're doing sound design, always try to do your sound design at the highest sample rate possible, and then you can downsample it to your final output, like 44.1, or some people like to do 48. And don't be afraid to use layers. Never really use just one sound effect for that sound. That footstep sound, traditionally what Foley people do, is it's never just the footstep. There's a footstep for a bass, but then we add like dirt, we add gravel, we add different footsteps layer to get this juicy, meaty sound. So that can work for any sound, really. Experiment with layers, like get it to melt together and your sound is just going to be really beefy. But you have to do it in a way that sounds like one coherent sound, or it ends up being out of place. So just be careful with that. Where do I source my music and effects from? I'll start with my sound effects. Most of my sound effects are homemade, so I've recorded them myself. And I always record my sound effects at 96 kilohertz for reasons that I mentioned previous. And just over the last 3 years, I have purchased sound effects from boutique sound effects libraries because they offer the 96 kilohertz, because I do so much sound design, I need to have that higher quality so that it's not degrading. But if you need to get sound effects on a budget that are still at that higher technical quality, you can go to a website called Sonicness. As for my music, I usually look for the royalty-free music that uses an attribution license, because just because it says royalty-free doesn't mean it's free to use. You have to be very careful with that. What do I most need help with? It would probably be the marketing of the final product. There is so much out there that it's sometimes hard to be seen. But the audio drama community is really supportive, so that you will get retweets and likes. And that definitely helps. But to reach that larger audience is where I struggle. Sometimes it takes a while for me to find the right technique and platforms that really work for my genre, because every genre doesn't necessarily have their audience on the same social medias. And where I get help with that is really just the audio drama community just being so supportive. You know, they'll give you that retweet, they'll give you that mention, because we're all one big community helping each other, which is great, because I've personally not seen that in the other industries that I've worked in. What do I wish was in existence to make my life easier? That one's a tough one. Honestly, I just wish right now I could have more plugins for my digital audio workstation, because there's so much that can be done now, not just effects-wise, but in the editing stage. But to get all of the tools, that would be nice. Like now you can get tools for frequency masking that you no longer have to do it by ear by EQing. You can get plugins now that are graphs that just analyzes the audio for you, and it'll tell you exactly where frequencies are being masked, so you can unmask them, and then your mix sounds fuller and certain sounds aren't getting buried by other sounds in essentially frequencies. So I guess that doesn't really answer that question, what I wish was in existence to make my life easier. I just wish I had more tools right now at my disposal to make my life as an audio engineer a little easier. And a last piece of advice for future producers, engineers, or mixers, never let anyone tell you that it can only be done one way. Audio is so subjective that you do what sounds good for you as long as it's not distorting or you're masking frequencies. Just don't let anyone dictate that it can only be done one way, that you only fit in that genre if it's done this way, because sound is so subjective. It's okay to mix genres and mediums together. And that's the beautiful thing with art. It's art, it's creative, it's subjective. You do what sounds good to you. Just keep at it. You know, there's so many people out there doing what we do. It's like, don't get discouraged. Like, these things take time. Nothing's going to happen overnight. Reach out to people who have been doing this for a while. I'm at that weird stage now. I've been doing this for 3 years. I have people coming to me and asking questions, and I wish I would have had that when I was just starting out. So I'm more than happy to answer people's questions as long as I don't give away any of my trade secrets that I've developed over the last 3 years. All right, that is all. Thank you for having me on the show. Take care, everyone.
Hello, my name is Molly Beth. I've done many things in the past year in the audio drama world, including working on the second season of Wooden Overcoats, being a writer and script supervisor. I've worked on Hector vs. the Future, being production pixie, and also voicing the character Carol Da Vinci in episode 2. And I'm also working on an up-and-coming mystery project, which you'll hear more about later. I first got started in the world of podcasting and audio drama, actually by making my own work in theatre and poetry and writing lots of different things not at all related to podcasting or audio drama. So I wrote my second solo show, Grey Wing House, which is a theatre production, which had a few performances last year that the very lovely humans behind Wooden Overcoats came along to see. And they enjoyed the writing of it so much that they asked me to be involved in their second series as a writer. And they asked me to write an episode for them, which ended up being episode 1 of season 2 of Wooden Overcoats, which was co-written with the amazing David K. Barnes. I got involved working with Hector vs. the Future through James Hamilton and James Huntrods, and Andy Goddard also. Again, through making my own work first, meeting people on the theatre and the comedy scene in London, and then kind of just becoming part of their projects too and making my own work, which they then saw and liked the look of and asked me to be part of their amazing work. My top tips for being a creative in this field are: don't wait for opportunities to come to you. If you have a story in your head, write it, make it. If it turns out to be a theatre piece, amazing. If it turns out to be an audio drama, incredible. If it turns out to be a stand-up comedy show, brilliant. Just don't wait to get your material out there. People will always come and find you if your work speaks for itself and stands up on its own. And be friendly to people, because it's always nice to be friendly, A. And B, it's great to make the effort to get to know the people in lots of different fields who you think you might want to work with one day, and invite them along to things. And just, it's a nice social kind of affair. Personally, I'm influenced by a lot of classic British gothic kind of writers. I love stories like Frankenstein by Mary Shelley and Wuthering Heights by the Brontes, and lots of very kind of quintessentially British stories. Having said that, also incredible dark twisted American gothic writers like Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft. I think blending the two can make a really interesting kind of vibe there. But there's so much to be inspired by these days, from comedy to cabaret to poetry and music. There's so much out there, and you can weave all of it into whatever story. I think cross-pollination of different mediums and forms can really make something very interesting and very special. So keep your eyes peeled later in the year for an amazing new project that I'm very, very thrilled to be working on. Details to follow, but do keep an eye on Jen and Chris Sugden, as there's an amazing script coming soon. Yes, mysterious, I know, but keep an eye out.
Hello and welcome to the amazing Kessie Relinky. Hello, Kessie.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Marvellous. We're so, so excited to have you on the show because obviously we've seen lots of wonderful, fun and brilliant comments from you all over different forums, and you're such a lady who's full of ideas. We just wanted to find out a bit more about you, really. So in what capacity are you involved in audio drama?
The role that I'm most commonly known for is being the forum troll in our Facebook group.
Yes.
And occasionally I do cover artwork for some audio drama podcasts. I'm not sure for which ones I'm the most known for. I guess Small Town Horror, Diary of a Madman, Subject Found. There's a lot more.
They're fantastic. So just if you can give listeners a kind of overview of what happened. So someone contacts you with regards to their program. What happens next? How kind of does it work to and fro from you and the producer?
The most common ways we have had so far is that they will give me a quick summary of the story. Sometimes they will hand me in the first episode or any random episode to read, so I can get a general gist of what the story is about and how it feels like, what the content of the story is, and so on. And I will ask them if they have any ideas what they want to have on their cover art. Generally, yeah. Sometimes they already have, they come in with ideas, and sometimes they will just let me have a go at it and come up with something. From there, I will usually do a few sketches, Send them in to them and let them choose something or ask if any of those are in the general vicinity of what they were thinking of.
And when you get ideas from the producer, how does your creative process work? Do you think on it for a little while and then, you know, ideas come to you during over a period of time, or are you straight into it a specific time that you work and crack on?
That usually depends on the kind of information I am given and how much it inspires me or how deep I am immersed in that topic. Because for some reason, I'm not very much into horror, but I get a lot of horror cover artwork stuff to do. So I'm having a hard time with those.
Scared by your own artwork.
Yes, I have to scare myself constantly.
Amazing. And where do you do your designing? What programs do you use?
I use Adobe Photoshop usually. Sometimes I will use Corel Draw or just regular pen and paper.
And say, for example, with the Small Town Horror, which is beautifully striking and I think works really well with the program itself, which obviously I'm sure our listeners have heard of, at least if not caught up with as soon as it's released. So what kind of processes did you go through? Because I remember seeing something, there were quite a few choices, and I just wonder how you worked with John to decide what worked best, really.
Usually my ideas start very, very big and complex for some reason. And I try to make a very simplistic sketch of what I have in mind and then break it down. And I make like a table and reuse some of the ideas and make variations of the ideas I had. And sometimes I just try something entirely different and create variations of that as well.
Brilliant.
Just to see, because sometimes ideas just evolve while you make them, and they sometimes get better and broken down more to the core of what you really want to display.
Yeah. Would you show these designs to anyone else? Like, do you show them to friends or colleagues or other people, or are they quite a private thing to do with you and the producer only? How do you work in that respect?
That depends. If I can't decide which one I want to do, I have this one friend who I sometimes show all of my sketches, and I ask her, if you had to open your podcast app and choose one of these podcasts based on the cover art, which one would you use? Yeah. And her choices are very often the ones I later turn into the actual cover, because she has a pretty good hand and these things.
What a good friend to have. We all need one of those to get commission. But that's the other thing as well. You know, you do this all for the love as well, don't you? From what I gather,
yeah.
It's not a paid thing. I mean, would you want to get into the paid arena, or are you quite happy kind of taking these commissions from?
I've actually been paid for most of the works that I've been doing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I want to say this on the show. I don't mind doing stuff for free. Mm. People just have to ask for it. Mm. Being paid is nice.
Yeah,
though.
Absolutely.
And usually the people that come to me are like, here, have $20. Can you do something for me? And I'm like, okay. Sure.
Yeah, and then there's all those times when you have to, with other life projects and things going, there's always a time where you have to say no, isn't there?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now, because I'm writing my own audio drama series right now. In December especially, the commissions got a little overboard, and many had a lot of very close deadlines, and I was very pressured and lost my flow for writing my story.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I hope you found it again.
Yeah, I found it again, and then I lost it again. but that was my own fault.
Let's go on a mojo hunt. We're going to find Casey's mojo, everybody. But yeah, and so what's this exciting new audio adventure? What are you working on, or are you not allowed to say?
Well, it's my own thing, so it's hopefully a fantasy story. I'm not sure if I bring it across well enough, though.
Okay. Cool.
I know where it's going, but I'm not sure how to describe it, mm-hmm. because it's very confusing to me as well.
Well, how exciting.
I just know it's kind of fantasy, and it has some supernatural elements. So basically, supernatural investigation set in a fantasy world.
Mm.
Maybe that's the best way to describe it. But it's more about the character development and how the characters interact and grow with each other.
Okay, wow. And have you been, alongside your writing, been also designing the kind of landscapes you see in your mind, or is it something that's very separate?
I've made a few artworks in that regard. Mm. My co-worker, who is also my friend, who looks at my designs and chooses the ones that I just mentioned earlier,
yeah.
she will also be one of the voices on my team,
yeah.
And she is generally very on board with my idea. So she helps spurring me on doing new artworks a lot.
Fantastic.
Because she wants to use them, she's the better designer between us.
Right.
Actually. But she needs a basis. She's not an artist. She just likes to design stuff. So she's always like, I want to make promo art. Can you make that and that image? So that's what we're doing right now.
Wow. And what kind of timescale have you got on this? Are you going to complete this sort of imminently? Or is this something that you kind of see going on for a little while until whenever you feel it's finished?
No, I definitely have a set ending, and I want to try to write the entire series before I start producing it,
yeah.
Because I'm that kind of person that gets distracted very easily, and I need very long to get one episode written down. Mm. I've actually been writing, I've got 10 episodes written so far, mm. almost all of them in November. And then I went on entirely rewriting them from sketch all through December and January.
Mm.
So I haven't really gotten very far yet.
Okay. Oh, it's very exciting, though. Well, we definitely look forward to seeing that. And I'm sure, we'll jump on that. Let us know when that's out, please. We'll put links to your potential works and things on the link to the podcast. So, yeah, people can perhaps have a little look if they haven't seen your amazing artwork, perhaps at some of the things that you've produced. I mean, how did you get into this in the first place? What's the kind of drew you into working in audio drama in this way?
Actually, that was an accident. The first thing I ever did was the cover art for Valenhai, for Matthew and Robert.
Yes.
And yeah. I'm not even sure how that happened, but for some reason, I think Matthew was just like, can you do me this cover art? We don't have it written or produced yet, but can you make it? And like, okay, sure. And then I started making it.
Wow, that's amazing.
And after I made the cover art, Matthew posted it in the Facebook group, and suddenly people started approaching me.
Well, it's brilliant. I'm not surprised. A very talented lady. And have you had any like training or creative courses that you've done in design before?
I'm a Wait, media designer? Wait, I forgot the English word.
Graphic designer?
That's something I learned, yeah, but I've been into this before. So before that, I'm actually self-taught artist. But yeah. Because of my interest, at some point I went to something like an art school. I wouldn't say it's really an art school because we didn't do much art there.
Sounds very intriguing as to what you really did do. Maybe we shouldn't tell our listeners.
I'm very confused about that myself.
I'm excited. Brilliant. So with regards to people wanting to perhaps do what you've done so brilliantly, what kind of top tips would you give people that... would like to do the same?
I think what I learned from the past few months or years doing the cover works for audio drama is if you have characters or monsters you definitely want on the cover art, then give some thoughts about how they look like. Because very often people ask me, can you put this character on the front cover? And but we have no idea what they really look like what kind of person they are, what, you know, details like hair color, facial structures, or anything like that, anything that sticks out. So I actually think if you put more thoughts into imagining the characters or the, if you're making a horror story or anything like that, the monsters or anything, then imagining a few cornerstones of what that creature really looks like can really help me as the artist finding a way to represent that creature or whatever, and also help you as a writer or audio drama creator finding the right way to describe them in the story and what kind of sound effects to use and such things.
Yeah, fantastic. And regarding people who might be living on your every word to try and fathom what is the best tip. I mean, would you encourage people to go into doing what you're doing? Or do you think stay away? Now, what would you do to encourage people to go into design in this way?
Well, I would say if you absolutely don't have any experience with designing things, maybe ask people for opinions before putting it out. Because I've seen a lot of, I don't want to say bad cover art, but there's always some details that just don't fit with the podcast, not genre, but the way it is presented on the apps. For example, the contrasts are something to consider, or the font you use. I've seen many podcast cover arts which use either way too small fonts or much too fancy fonts. And as a result, when I look at them in my podcast catcher, I can't really make out what they're saying or what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the shapes also have to be really clear and really broken down to a minimum.
Yeah, because there's some, isn't there, where you scan the page, you instantly recognize.
Yeah. Also try to find like a color or something that that really sticks out that you think would fit the tone of your podcast. Like, for example, if you go through your podcast catcher, mine, for example, only shows all the cover arts. It doesn't even show the names of the podcast, so I have to go by the cover arts. What instantly sticks out, for example, is the Hello from the Magic Tavern, because it's bright and yellow.
Yes.
So yeah. Try, even if you're making horror, try not to go all black and gloomy or something, because those absolutely go under.
Yeah, yeah. No, brilliant, brilliant tips there. Yeah, thank you. And is there anybody that you've been influenced by from work you've been creating?
Not for podcast cover art particularly, I have to admit that.
But as an artist?
As an artist, yeah, there have been many individual peoples that I've been influenced by, but too many to name, I guess.
Brilliant. And with future shows coming up, is there any specific things that you would like people to draw attention to? Like, is there a Kesey website people can go and see your work on, or specific things for them to look for updates for your potential new audio drama?
I have a Facebook page made for that, well, for my entire brand or studio, actually, which is facebook.com/trilunis, Trilunis. Okay. I haven't updated that a lot, but I will probably use it more as I get towards production of the actual story.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so, so much for spending some time to talk to us today about what you do. And yeah, I'm sure
thank you for having me.
Everybody thinks you're totally amazing at what you do. So yes, don't stop. You're allowed some breaks, but do come back and do some more.
So, definitely. Yes.
Thank you so much, Kessie.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Hello, I'm Laura Bramblett. I am a co-producer from Crossroads Stations, as well as the head sound editor from Jim Robbie and the Wanderers. So I had almost no education in sound editing until I was out of college. And about a year after I graduated, my best friend and my now boss, Erie Alexander, had been working on Jim Robbie and the Wanderers for quite a while. It was going to be a band, and then they decided to make a podcast that would be much easier to produce and to build an audience for. Then early one morning, I was contacted, and they told me that they had contacted several different sound editors trying to get someone to work on this project, and none of them were able to listen to instructions or follow through on promises or deadlines, and they were getting desperate, and they knew that if they told me what to do, I would do it. And so I agreed to come on as sort of a temp at the beginning, and when we got started, it was some of the hardest work, most frustrating, learning as I went, struggling uphill the entire time work that I've ever had to do. We didn't have a good recording setup. We had five actors crammed into a closet with a single mic recording a scene at a time, and the sound quality was not good, and I was doing what I could to clip the sound of rustling scripts out of the vocal channels and just doing everything I could. But after I got over the initial fears and the initial struggles, it became some of the most addicting work that I have ever had the joy of doing. And I thank Erie every day that they brought me in on this project, because I have had a blast working on Jim Robbie. My main job is that we now record our vocal tracks individually instead of all at once around a single mic. Every actor goes into the closet individually, records their lines, and then I get sent each individual file, and then I chop up the takes and arrange them so that they sound like a flowing conversation, as if two people are in the same room together. And it is not easy. It is definitely something that I have had to learn, and I keep having to learn. Every time I learn something new to get better, there's something else that I have to fix. And that's part of the joy of it, is that I went in not knowing what I'm doing, and I can listen to other shows, and I can listen to people talk, and I can learn that way. I can learn every day by listening to my surroundings on how to be a better editor. And it's very rewarding, but also very hard. And it can be a really big workload, like making sure that all the sound files get organized and making sure that all of the lines got recorded. Like, there's been several times where I've had to contact our director, Erie, and be like, we're missing an entire scene from someone. And that's just, from the way we work, it's one of the downsides of the way we work, because I am a couple hundred miles away from the rest of the team. They're mostly in Florida. I'm in Alabama, soon to be Seattle. And I can't sit in on the recordings like some sound editors do to give feedback on like levels and line reads or anything like that. I am completely hands off, and I get brought in later in a completely isolated kind of way. But that's part of the challenge, and that's part of the joy of it. It's like sculpting with sound is the only way that I can describe what my job is. Because you start with nothing. And we've got very limited setup. We've got no budget to speak of. And so I can't buy big sound packs like big studios would do. And even some of my contemporaries are able to, like, they've got the kind of equipment that they can take out in the field and get high quality recordings of smashing a car with a hammer. And I can't do that. So I have to figure out ways of doing that with what I can get my hands on for free. And it isn't easy, but it's an interesting challenge, which I enjoy. And one of the great things about the audio drama world is that the bar of entry is so low. And in that way, like, I get to talk to people who are also doing the same things that I do, who are from vastly different experiences. I talk to people who've never done this before, who are just about to start their first podcast, and that's great. And I talk to people who've been doing this for years, and they used to work in radio, and that's great, because I can learn from people who have so much more experience, and then I can pass that knowledge on to new people. And I think that the low bar of entry is excellent, because it does mean that you get some productions that are much lower quality than others, but you also get a much more vast number of voices. I have found in watching television and in watching movies that if you don't tell a certain kind of story with certain types of actors and certain types of characters, then your story doesn't get told. And for anybody who is a minority, whether you be a woman or a person of color or in the queer community, that can be very disheartening. But in the world of audio drama, if you've got a mic and you have the commitment and somewhere online to stick a file, then you can make an audio drama and you can tell your story. That to me is one of the most powerful things about the current audio drama community, is that there is a place for your voice and I want to hear your story. I have sort of a reputation for being the person who will listen to everything. If any of my friends who work in podcasting want recommendations for podcasts to listen to, they always ask me, because I will listen to whatever I can get my hands on, regardless of what it's about or how well it's made. In fact, I really, really love listening to things that are brand new and made by people with no experience and maybe aren't of the highest quality, because there's so much room to grow there, and I want to be on the ground floor when the next great thing comes out. And I want to hear your story. I want to hear new stories, and that's so powerful to me. I grew up listening to NPR with my dad from quite a young age. He was a sculptor, and while he was sculpting, he used to put on NPR. And I remember growing up listening to Prairie Home Companion and these very jokey versions of the kind of radio drama that he would have actually grown up with, because he was a child during the 40s. So he would have actually listened to the kind of radio drama that we are calling back to. And I like to think that he would be really impressed and proud that we're bringing back a dead art form. So you can check out Jim Robbie and the Wanderers at jimrobbieandthewanderers.com or patreon.com/jimrobbieandthewanderers. Maybe throw us a little bit of support. Come have fun with us. We're super niche. We are a post-apocalyptic, POC, queer-driven, family-friendly comedy. And I think we've got something that you were not likely to find anywhere else. So, you know, you should definitely come check us out. And we've got a bunch of stuff, like, raring to go at Crossroads Stations. We've got a bunch of new shows. All our actors and all our writers are working on their own shows, and we've got a huge lineup. I've started work on a show with Jim Robbie and the Wanderers writer Shannon Sawyer. We've been working on a alien invasion propaganda story called Otherverse, and I'm hoping that we will be ready to release maybe around early summer, late spring. It all depends. So please come check us out, and thanks very much.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lauren Shippen, and I am the creator, writer, director, one of the voice actors, and just general head nasty woman in charge for the podcast The Bright Sessions. I started The Bright Sessions about 18 months ago. We released our first episode in November of 2015, and I got into it because as an actor who was acting in LA and auditioning and kind of being part of the Hollywood industry out here, I was getting kind of discouraged at the roles that were available to me. It was a lot of girl next door, romantic interest for the main lead, a lot of breakdowns for characters that basically just described the women physically and they had no actual personality or character traits. And so I thought I should do something myself. And they're always telling you in Hollywood to make your own thing, create your own stories, be your own characters. And I thought that audio drama could be a really good way to do that because I didn't have a huge budget. And as many of you know, making an audio drama doesn't actually have to cost that much. And also, I am an actor, so I know dialogue. I'm not necessarily a visual person. I've not really written a screenplay before. So jumping in just from a dialogue perspective seemed like the easiest way into it for me. And at the time, I had only listened to two audio dramas, Cabin Pressure, which is a BBC Radio 4 comedy that's delightful, and of course, Welcome to Night Vale, which is a lot of people's first introduction to the audio drama world. And The Bright Sessions is nothing like either of those shows, but it kind of gave me an understanding of what the range of things that you could do in the audio drama were. You know, Welcome to Night Vale is this one-person radio show with some music and excellent writing, and then Cabin Pressure is recorded in front of a live audience and has these big celebrities and tons of sound effects and is structured more like a traditional sitcom. So I thought I could find the middle ground in telling the story that I wanted to tell about these people with supernatural abilities in therapy. And I just fell in love with the audio drama world after that. The community is so welcoming and there's so much good stuff being made right now that I am now a complete fan of audio drama. But before I started making the show myself, I really didn't have much exposure to it. So it's been a really fun process of discovery and creation simultaneously, which is kind of a hard thing to do, but has been really enjoyable and a really great sort of baptism by fire learning experience. And I think that's one of the great pros of audio drama versus other formats is that you can jump into it with relatively little experience. You know, I watched a bunch of YouTube tutorials about how to edit in Adobe Audition, and I went on the podcast subreddit and figured out what best mics were to use and kind of learned as I went along. And are there things that I wish I could go back and fix and do differently and do better? Absolutely. But I think that that's the case in any kind of creative medium. And what's nice about podcasting and about audio drama is that you can experiment and you can jump in and explore without breaking the bank and without a huge, huge investment. Obviously now The Bright Sessions has become a huge part of my life and a big investment for me, but it doesn't have to be. It can be a hobby for a lot of people. And I think that's such a wonderful thing because then more stories than ever can get out there. And this is why I would really encourage people to get involved in audio drama because of this freedom of expression. In, you know, film and television, you have people looking over your shoulder, trying to change your story, and they all have different motivations. And sometimes those changes and having those different opinions and different points of view can be really, really useful and can make your story so much better. But oftentimes it means that voices like women's voices and the voices of people of color and the voices of queer people get lost in the shuffle because mainstream entertainment is still very much a straight white man's game. And so as a female creator, audio drama has been a wonderful, wonderful space for me to stretch my legs and to tell the story that I want to tell and to tell stories that focus on women and focus on queer people and show that both of those sets of people are interesting to audiences and that their stories deserve to be told. And I hope eventually to do that on a larger stage, and that will mean getting more people involved. But at this point, I have 100% creative control over absolutely everything that I'm doing with The Bright Sessions. I make every decision. Nothing happens in the show if I don't want it to. And that kind of freedom and control is something that's not only so rare in any kind of mainstream entertainment to begin with, but especially rare for a woman. So I really, really encourage everybody, but specifically marginalized groups like women and people of color and queer people, to make their own audio dramas, because it really can be a platform for you to tell the stories that you want to tell that other people are too afraid to give you the space or to give you the money or to give you the opportunity to tell. So I think that that is one of the greatest assets of audio drama, and something that people are slowly beginning to realize. And hopefully it will kind of trickle up. And as audio drama continues to flourish, the larger entertainment conglomerates will realize, oh, hey, these stories are doing really well in this space. I bet they would do well on a, you know, main TV screen or a film screen as well. So I think that more diversity, even in a smaller entertainment sphere like audio drama, is only good for entertainment as a whole. In terms of advice for making an audio drama, I think something that maybe people don't realize is that audio drama doesn't actually have to be restrictive at all. I think that when I first started writing The Bright Sessions, I made a lot of assumptions about what people could infer from audio and what you actually could do with a story in audio. And now that I've been doing it for almost 2 years, I realize that the sky is really the limit. Yeah, you can't rely on visuals, but you can still tell the story as you would tell it in a TV show or on a stage or on film in audio. And the audience will understand. So I think that there's actually a lot more freedom and a lot more range in audio drama, and you don't have to feel like you're fenced in. So for someone who's writing their audio drama, I say, you know, start as big and wide as you want. And then if you get into the recording studio or get into the editing bay and things aren't working, you can rework. But don't feel like you're fenced in, I think would be my first piece of advice. So that's something that I wish I had known when I started, that I could do whatever I wanted in audio and the audience would probably go along with it. But the thing that I think I got really right and got really lucky with The Bright Sessions is that I live in LA, and so I'm surrounded by a bunch of talented actors, and I am so lucky to have the actors that I have working on my show, because they are incredibly talented and they elevate my writing to a point that I never thought that it could get. And I think that that's been one of the biggest draws and one of the reasons that we've been able to build an audience, is because the acting is so good. And part of that is because I have cast these incredible actors, but I think a really big piece of it is the fact that we record in the room together. So we're not doing remote recordings, we're not having people read their lines and then send them in. And I think for some podcasts that really works, but for me, I really wanted it to be about the connections between these characters. So if you can, I would say get your actors in the room together. Have them sit across from each other. We just record in my bedroom. We don't need a fancy studio. It's about these people, and it's about this story and these characters. And when you get actors actually in a room doing the scenes all the way through, that connection becomes palpable. And you can feel it even in audio in the same way that you could see that kind of connection on screen. So I think that recording in person live is something that more and more podcasts should do if able. And I'm sure there's a lot more I could say about how to edit, how to schedule, how to record, how to structure a season, but I would be here for hours. I will say get a dry erase board or a chalkboard. I use a chalkboard to map out my seasons, and it's really nice because you can kind of move things around and draw things and have magnets to stick pieces of paper and different ideas. And that can be a nice visual representation of what you want your season to look like. But my biggest piece of advice, and I think the most important one, is to just do it and to just tell the story how you want to tell it, and make sure that it's something that you're passionate about. Don't make something just for the sake of making something. I think that if you have a story in you or an idea in you that you just cannot shake and that you just keep coming back to and thinking about, then that needs to be told. Tell that. Even if you think, no one's going to like this, no one's going to listen, I'm going to be alone and thinking that this thing is interesting, chances are that there will be a lot of people out there who actually are really interested and can get really invested in that story. If you're passionate about it, that's what matters, because people can see that and people want to see passion in the entertainment that they're consuming. So find that thing that keeps you up at night and write it and do it and get it out into the world and jump in with both feet. And if you want to listen to the Bright Sessions, you can find us on all of your podcasting apps and iTunes, as well as at thebrightsessions.com. And we also have a Patreon if you would like to support the show. That's patreon.com/thebrightsessions. And we're also on Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter at Bright Podcast. So come and find us, say hi, feel free to email us at thebrightsessions@gmail.com if you have any questions. And good luck with all of your audio drama making endeavors, and I can't wait to hear it.
We have to say thank you so, so much to all of you.
Yes.
Sarah and I really found that inspiring,
yep.
Massively inspiring, actually. So thank you for all that, and I hope you, our listeners, did too.
Yeah, I think there's so many things in each of those little snippets that we've heard that everybody can kind of take and believe that that person was talking directly to them. That's how I took it when I first listened to these clips, and I've listened a couple of times now and feel inspired, you know. And I don't know if you know, but the interview with Kessie is my first foray into audio editing. So I'm very excited.
Hooray!
Fiona gave me a badge. It's all very exciting. you know, actually has achieved a little step towards being autonomously creative in the AD world. So yes, I'm very excited. Little steps, as I say. I know there were possibly some mistakes. And yes, we had a little bit of problem with mic balancing. But I'm very excited that, you know, as a result of these people saying just do it, I think I have, and that's exciting for me. So anyone else that's doing that on their first little steps of editing, I'd love to have chats with you, so feel free to contact me via the forums or Fiona as well for her professional expertise. Don't make that sound.
Well, the thing is, I mean, we do have an amazing array of, you know, professional sound engineers and so on,
yeah,
on the forums,
yeah,
and whatever. So if you do want to send any questions in to podcast@audiodramaproduction.com, then we will obviously, if you're not on social media, then we would be very happy to put those questions to people on the forums so that they can give their expertise.
Yeah, perfect. I think, you know, I just posted one question and so many people were lovely and personal messaged me about what you need help with and how can I help you understand this. And so yeah, I think it is just that question of communicate. And if you've been inspired by any of the ladies that you've heard, they're all on Twitter and social media. I'm sure they'd love a little dialogue with you about, you know, any of the aspects that they've covered in their little snippets of things, and listen to their shows because they're all brilliant.
And of course, if you're in the area where they're doing a stage show in some cases, then do go and see it. We're going to put all of the links into the show notes. Thanks once more to our Patreons for your
continued support.
We
love your Patreons. That was the song just for them.
We really appreciate it. Thank you.
It's really kind to help the show kick along. And we hope to be showing you some more exciting things, Patreons, in the coming months. Perhaps even before everyone else, depending on how quickly we get our act together.
Thank you all very much for listening.
Yes, thank you.
And a big congratulations to anybody working in audio drama at the moment. And of course, to the women, we look forward to celebrating your special day next year.
Woohoo! Yes.
Woohoo! It should be our special day, shouldn't it?
Actually, that's the twist. I could then say, are you not a woman, Fiona? It's our special day. We are all women.
We are.
And on that note, thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.